Welcome back to yet another exciting episode of The Current Review. My name is Thamsanqa Ngaku, sometimes known as TT, sometimes known as the chairman. And today I am going to be a spectator, more of a spectator in a debate that, you know, seems to be very interesting in our country, beginning now and possibly well beyond the date of the 29th of May, because I don't think it will end on the 29th of May. But today it's more exciting for me because beyond the debate that we have always known of the older people in the political space exchanging ideas or debating ideas, we've got actual young leaders of the political parties that will be vying for a spot in the elections. We have a representative from the Democratic Alliance, Ausi Mbali Mnaba. We have also got a leader from the African National Congress Youth League, Ausi Sinazo Hafula. And as always, we have Tebza. You know, Tebza has the privilege of having spoken to both our guests in previous occasions. I think I've only spoken to Sinazo before. I've never spoken to Mbali. But I watched that interaction with Mbali and Tebza last week. It was last week, right? A week before last year. Very exciting. But now we want to get the DA and the ANC, but the youth perspective on what, you know, they think that their respective parties carry as hopes for the young people of this province in particular. Good morning, colleagues.
Good morning, Titi.
Thank you.
So, good morning, Abdi Tamsani.
Thank you. I think let's get right into it. We'll do it this way. First, we'll give the leader of the ANC Youth League an opportunity to make an opening statement of about 5 minutes, if you are, if you want to go that far, you know, but just make an opening statement around, you know, what you guys think about what young people should do or consider in voting on the 29th of May. And what is it that you have as hopes for definitely this country and this province, particularly as it concerns young people? So we'll give the first spot to Sinazo, and then we'll give the opportunity to Mbali, and not necessarily a rebuttal, but their own opening perspective on the issues. So let's start with Sinazo. Sinazo, you may go.
Thank you, Titi. As introduced, my name is Sinazo Hafula. I'm the spokesperson of the ANC Youth League in the Free State Province. And it's once again an honor to be here to interact with the viewers of the Free State in particular and South Africa in general. As an opening statement, I would like to immediately delve into the manifesto of African National Congress and say without fear of contradiction that we feel young people in South Africa should have confidence in the African National Congress. Young people in South Africa should, in their decision making on the 29th of May 2024, have faith in the African National Congress. And here's why. It's 30 years of democracy, right? It's 30 years of undoing the injustices of the past, the redistributions, the redressings, and the whatnot. So as the ANC, we are saying that a lot has been done and we are yet to do more together. And as we do more together in the African National Congress, we have various platforms, in fact, on how we can do better. I'm in the Youth League. I'm a leader of the Youth League. However, as the Youth League, our responsibility is to be the necessary agitation to the ANC to ensure that the youth voice is heard and that young people are catered for. And we are confident in saying, yes, young people are being catered for in the African National Congress. And I want to cite the six priorities as put forth by the president, Comrade Cyril Ramaphosa, in the manifesto as presented of the ANC, which the first priority, being the most important priority for us as young people, is the creation of jobs. It's titled Putting South Africa to Work. That is the first priority within the manifesto of the African National Congress. The second priority being industrialization and infrastructure for an inclusive economy. Thirdly, we are speaking about tackling the high cost of living, then invest in people, meet basic needs, defend democracy and advance freedom, better Africa and better the world. So those are the key areas that the African National Congress will be zooming into going into these elections. And of course, one may argue that the manifesto of the African National Congress is the same year in, year out. Yes, the manifesto does not change because the objective remains the same. The objective is that of liberating the people of South Africa. However, as years go by, the means change and the priority areas change. So at this point, as the ANC Youth League, we have been advocating for the inclusion of young people in workspaces. We don't want to be a youth that never went to work. We don't want to be a young, we don't want to be pensioners that never went to work. So the ANC itself is taking very seriously the issue of unemployment, and we are looking forward to this discussion. It's not, I don't believe this is a debate, but I believe this is a discussion of young minds in two opposing parties seeking to shape the Free State, seeking to shape the politics of South Africa, because in as much as one would say that they don't do politics, like some of our woke young people, but they need to understand that politics do them. Like, I mean, politics affect each and every person in South Africa, whether you are a part of a political party or not. So I'm hoping that Mbali and myself will...
take the first bite for the TA to Mbali. Mbali, please go.
Theme of our manifesto is to formulate a rescue plan for the current situation that South Africa is in. We are faced with so many socioeconomic ills and shortcomings that have plagued South African citizens. And I think we come as an opposition party saying that we want to offer ourselves as a beacon of hope in the midst of all of these adversities. Like a room that is completely dark, we want to be that light in that room. And that is the perspective, or rather the approach that the DA really wants to take in terms of rescuing or restoring what's left of South Africa. To delve into our manifesto is premised heavily on creating realistic and sustainable solutions for the problems that we're currently facing. And when we rolled out our manifesto, it was very clear that we needed to highlight priorities or highlight elements that are sort of pressing, or rather issues that are pressing currently in South Africa, that every citizen in South Africa can obviously concur that there needs to be remedies, but sustainable, realistic, progressive solutions to the problems that we're facing. First and foremost, in the seven pillars of our manifesto, the first would be the creating jobs. We have committed ourselves to the capability of creating 2 million jobs within our tenure in office at national government. And the idea is that we no longer want South Africans or young people, the unemployment rate is quite high. And we don't want young people to depend only on social welfare. I mean, social welfare is an excellent and a good safety net, but it is not sustainable for the day-to-day person. For instance, I think it's important that we highlight that although social welfare is a good safety net, it is not sustainable in the long run. And so we say we want to create jobs that could contribute to a high quality of life for an average South African, regardless of age. Secondly, in our pillars, we've mentioned ending load shedding and water shedding. Water shedding is actually a fairly new concept, and it's happening across various parts of provinces in the country. And I think we've highlighted the need to deal with this particular crisis, both the energy crisis and the water crisis. Thirdly, we spoke about curbing crime. And I think crime is obviously sort of it's an element of unemployment. It's a domino effect. I mean, if people are unemployed, then they would resort to crime. And obviously the crime rate has increased significantly. And so as the DA, we have committed ourselves to focusing on how we can eradicate criminal activity, or rather not completely eradicate, but find ways to curb it in some way or form. Fourth, we've obviously, this has been a hot topic nationwide, and we've also spoken about completely abolishing CADA deployment. The idea of abolishing CADA deployment is that we want all South Africans to be hired on the premise of merit, as opposed to anything else. If you are capable to do the job, you should be hired based on your capabilities and not based on your political affiliation whatsoever. And so that's what we've highlighted. The fifth pillar is that we've placed emphasis on eradicating poverty, or rather dealing with the issue of poverty within our country, and we've highlighted a couple of remedies as to how that would happen. The sixth pillar of the manifesto, we've spoken about grade four learners. So the issue with grade four learners is that most grade four learners cannot read for meaning. And the inability to comprehend what you're reading is a skill that needs to be looked into. And so we've really emphasized the need to sort of improve the quality of education, particularly with reading and writing skills. The seventh, or the last pillar of our manifesto, is quality healthcare for all. I think quality healthcare shouldn't be limited to a few, but it should be accessible to everyone. And so we've also highlighted in our manifesto the importance of quality healthcare within, not only within the national government, but also at the provincial government as well. And our manifesto is essentially sort of our blueprint. I love how we always coin it, as it's our blueprint of what exactly South Africans can expect, what they should vote for, what are our focus areas, and how those focus areas are in direct benefit to them if they do obviously vote us into national government. And so I think it is just important that when approaching the polls, an assessment of the political party that you wish to be in government. How are they assessing the problems, number one? But number two, what kind of solutions are they bringing to the table? Are they sustainable? Are they progressive, innovative, realistic? And of course, lastly, I think it is important to also mention implementation. It's good and well to have a manifesto and to have all these solutions populated onto a manifesto, but your inability to implement them makes the manifesto futile. It makes the manifesto fruitless. And so one thing about the DA is that if we identify problems and identify solutions for those problems, we will definitely implement them. And we've proven that time and time again. Thank you so much, Tamsanqa.
Bali, and thank you very much, Sinazo. I think what I'm getting from both our colleagues here is that, you know, at a high level, maybe surface level, you know, the two different political parties don't seem to be sounding too different from each other. You know, they all agree that there is a need to create jobs, in particular for young people. There is a need to improve the quality of our education, and there is a need for a better healthcare, you know, and so on and so on. So they don't seem to be saying two different things, like, or vastly different perspectives on this. And maybe perhaps this goes to what, you know, the last point made by Umbali when she says that, you know, you may have a blueprint or a well-written manifesto, but the, you know, the crux of it goes into the implementation of the actual manifesto. What do you
I'm gonna be straight to the point, and there's only one question that goes to both political parties. I hear what they say. It's something that's been said over and over and over, and yeah. But the main question that goes out is how and when, you know, because just those two questions, how and when, comes back to an issue of what young people are actually complaining about on the ground. Because we keep on hearing one thing, we're going to do this for you. We promise to deliver 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. We promise to create jobs. But when posts are created, young people are never actually included in those posts. And it goes back to both the ruling party and the opposition party. What opportunities? Yes, we can see with the likes of Bomba Lilibos Nazo, there are opportunities for young people. But you must remember, this is young people within the organizational structure. But now I'm going to speak on behalf of those young people that are outside, that are walking the street day by day, holding that envelope, trying to find jobs or those opportunities. But now, if we keep on saying we're going to create these opportunities, how are you going to do them? What solutions are you putting on the table? Because currently, right now, there are opportunities out there. There are wealth, employment opportunities that can be created. But it seems like they are not being created for young people. And as much as we're saying the manifestos are there and what Mbali just said, to say you can have a blueprint. But the saddest thing is that if you don't implement your blueprint, nothing will get done. I mean, like, we are 30 years into democracy, but we're still talking about the high rate of unemployment, especially amongst young people. The crime rate is too high because young people are frustrated. So they seek the shortest way to make money. The STI and the HIV rate keeps on climbing, especially amongst the young people, because young people, they see the opportunity to say, I mean, like, I was watching one interview, one of these young persons yesterday, they did a podcast and they were saying one thing. But I've tried everything that I could do. I even tried to get a job. I even started working at retail. But the saddest thing is that I wasn't getting the opportunities that I wanted. So I just saw an opportunity to say, and sell myself in order to make good money. And that's what young people, unfortunately, they are doing. They're selling themselves to old people in order for them to make better money. So now if both political parties can actually answer those two questions now, how and when, because that's the most important thing, because we can't say we're going to do job creation in the next coming 30 years again. Come on.
Mm. And I think both of them have got experience at governance. For example, the ANC has got 30 years experience of governance, and the DA has got some bits and pieces of governance in bits and pieces of our country, but certainly for a long time in the Western Cape, you know. I want to ask this question, therefore. Sinazo, with your experience in government, has the ANC done enough for young people in this country in order for them to be able to access jobs easily?
All right. Thank you for the questions. The one question from Deboho is how and when, and Titi is asking, Has it done enough for young people in terms of job creation? If I capture Tebogo, and ultimately my answer for Tebogo will answer that of TT.
I don't know if it's just me or is everybody else, but it's difficult to hear what
Now,
Hillary.
I'm going to start with the when.
Okay.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you now.
Okay. So I'm saying I'm going to start with the when, the question that was asked by Tebogo. And the answer is, it's currently happening. It's currently happening across the country, but we will zoom into the Free State more to say. It's currently happening. There's been strides for employment since, my time in the Youth League started last year, and therefore I'm vested on all the occurrences since then. And the how part as well, done enough for young people. Now, we previously had a lekgotla of the African National Congress.
You know,
we were discussing how we can better serve the people.
Hi, Sinazo. You know what I think we should do? I think we should, maybe you get yourself in a position where you are, where your network coverage is better, because right now we're struggling to, to get your point. You are, you come across in a manner which makes it difficult for us to to hear you. Maybe let's give this opportunity to Umbali to tell us, in the exact same question, what has the DA, where it governs, done to create jobs for young people? And also the question that Debs Ayahore, when and how?
All right, thank you so much for that. That's a good question on how and when. And I think we've now specifically focused on job creation because that's the pressing issue amongst young people. And I think, I know we always get criticized for using the Western Cape as an example or sort of as an illustration of our governance, of our level of governance. But I think because it's been so effective and our policies have been so effective in that particular province, it only makes sense to make reference to the Western Cape. And we're not gloating, it's factuals, it's facts. First and foremost, I want to speak on job creation. Over the past year, the Western Cape was able to create 3,000 new jobs, as opposed to the Free State province, where 70,000 people were now part of the unemployment line. And I think that should speak volumes as to the current, just sort of the statistical status of in comparison to the two provinces. When I spoke about our manifesto, the first pillar I touched on is that the DA is adamant about creating jobs within the term of office that we're in, that we're in once we get into national government. And I'll highlight a few elements as to how we plan to make job creation easier, or rather create a conducive environment for job creation, because that's the main role of government. I think we should never move away from that. I know I sound like an echo chamber when I say this, but the role of government is essentially to create a conducive environment to attract investors, even foreign investment. And so that's the core, that's the foundation of any sphere of government. And I think that should be our primary focus, is that when we upgrade and maintain our infrastructure, when we ensure that service delivery is met adequately, then it is easier to attract investment. That's the simple matter of it. But what the DA is saying is offering through the employment crisis is that, first and foremost, we are going to introduce, once we do get into government, that's the when part. Once we do get into government, And we're going to introduce something called the Youth Unemployment Opportunity Certificate. And so essentially what the certificate will do is that it will empower young people to break free from the constraints of minimum wage. It will make it easier for young people aged 18 to 35 to move from not having a job to having one by offering flexible employment term. So that is what we're going to start with, is that we're going to offer a certificate that will be valid for approximately 12 years, so that the unemployed people who have not been employed for 12 months or more have access to employment opportunities. Secondly, we as the DA want to slash red tape or completely eradicate red tape, especially when it comes to SMEs. I think the biggest sort of the biggest sector that is ignored at the current moment is the informal informal trading sector, where you have your gogo selling vegetables on the street, or you have a young guy straight out of university or even straight out of high school selling hats and shoes on the street. That informal trader section needs to be invested in. And as the DA, we're saying that we want to make it easier for these particular traders to comply with laws and regulations, to comply with their health and safety standards. But also at the same time, we want to help them accelerate how they can set up, perhaps if they want to move into setting up a shop, reduce the time that it takes to set up a shop, reduce the cost that it takes to actually set up a shop, a business for these informal traders. And that's what we've heavily focused on, is that we've noticed that there's a gap, that the informal traders are being ignored, and we want to highlight the importance of capacitating informal traders so that when they sell their products, it's easier for them to sell it and make a living out of it. Another point that we've also addressed time and time again is the restrictive labor market, and we're planning to reform it. I think one thing that we've always highlighted is that it is impossible, it is illogical rather, to replace inequality with more inequality. And currently we have the Employment Equity and the Preferential Procurements Act that is doing exactly that. You know, hiring someone on the premise of race is not, is irrational, it's illogical. And so what we're saying is that we want to introduce policies where someone is hired on the premise of merit. You are qualified to get the job, so you will get the job. But in addition to that, we ensure that everyone has equal access to perhaps education opportunities, to ensure that when you compete in this labor market, you have the skills. You've had access to the right educational institutions. You've had access to the right skills development and programs, or skills enhancement programs, so that when you do enter the job market, you are well equipped to compete, not on the basis of race, but on the basis of your capabilities, your qualifications, your merit. And so we want to do away with that. But another important element, without wasting further time, is that something I've touched on as well, is that you need a capacitated citizens. You need capacitated citizens, and you need skilled citizens. And obviously, when citizens get into the job market, we want to ensure that they are equipped with the necessary skills to compete in the labor market. We're not saying, listen, we want to hire you only on the premise of merit, but we're not offering skills enhancement programs to facilitate that. And so I think it's important that I highlight that in the Western Cape, as I've mentioned, that jobs are being created. But even when jobs are being created, we're not saying that in the creation of our jobs, that there shouldn't still be skills enhancement. Even people who are employed should be enhanced and trained time and time again to ensure that we are in line with the evolving world order.
That, you know, before we go on to Usinazo, I just want to get onto one point you were saying about you know, the need to employ on a merit basis rather than on a on the question of race, which is a valid point. But when you check the history of this country, that people were oppressed on the basis of their race, and certain jobs were also allocated on the basis of race in the past, you know. Now, as a result, a lot of our black, you know, counterparts, like black people, are still facing, you know, oppression or current oppression in terms of unemployment and so on, called oppression, still on the, you know, on the basis of race, meaning that a large majority of the people who are unemployed are still very black people. Why would it not be correct to be deliberate about uplifting those black people out of the poverty by giving them, you know, preferential treatment in terms of getting employment, thereby, you know, lifting more people out of poverty in Bali?
Tamsanga, I hear you. I hear you very well. And let's use me as an example, right? I come from a middle class background. I am very black, as you can see. And I want to make an example of the NSFAS funding model. I did not benefit from NSFAS because I did not qualify to benefit from NSFAS, right? And I think what happened is that my parents now had to fend for themselves, had to make sure that I get access to education through different means, you know, through loans, through taking some money from their retirement plan, just so that I can get access to education. So I was heavily disadvantaged in that manner, that I couldn't get access as a black woman, or black young girl, lady, whatever you want to label me as, I couldn't get access to a higher education so that I can upskill myself and enter into the labor market, because I didn't qualify. And so what we're saying is that it is very important to create policies that include everyone. You can't remedy, like I said, you can't remedy inequality with more inequality. And the policies that are currently in place are trying to fix inequality with inequality. If we hire people on the premise of race as opposed to the premise of their merit, then it really defeats the idea that we want to have a skilled market or a skilled labor force that will contribute to the economy of South Africa. And so I do not disagree, and I do not, I do not disagree with the sentiments that you have echoed in terms of our history. But I think it is also important that we actually build on that history and say, listen, moving forward, let us address, or rather, let us cater for all. Let us cater for everyone, regardless of your ethnicity, regardless of your gender, regardless of your age. Let us cater for everyone. Let everyone have access to the same opportunities, right? And so if you're going to create a skills enhancement program, that skills enhancement program should be open for all who are interested, so that they can enhance themselves and compete in the labor market and get a job. I shouldn't be required to be a black woman in order for me to get into the skills enhancement program so that I can compete in the labor market and get a job. That should be besides the point. And so imagine if there was a, hypothetically, imagine if when I started university in 2014 and there was a policy that required, or rather that catered for all South Africans, regardless of age, regardless of gender, regardless of race, catered for all South Africans to gain access to higher education through the NSFAS model, regardless of your background. Imagine if I had that opportunity, that I would have been equipped. Obviously, I was lucky enough to have two working class parents who scrambled, who had to scrape cents together just to get me into education. And so when we speak about impartiality and fairness, That's where it comes in, that when we implement policies or we create policies and we create opportunities, job opportunities, that it should cater for all. It shouldn't be a segment of a population, because that it really does take us from what we're trying to achieve.
Your point is well made. Thank you very much. I think let's give Sinazo that opportunity again. And I think we'll do this, Sinazo, with you. Let's as you start to talk, test whether or not you are able to, you know, to carry through without interruptions again. And if it continues, I think we would just request you to switch off your video, because maybe, you know, it adds more weight, or it demands more data, you know, from your device. But do go ahead and give us what we had started to answer in the previous question, which was when and how, and what has the ANC done to provide jobs for young people or job opportunities for young people up to date? Thank you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Thank you. Thank you so much, Titi. I hope I am more audible now. And
you are.
I am aggravated by something that Bali said just now. So I just want to touch on that and then go back to the bone of contention. She says we can't eradicate inequality with more inequality, and that hiring someone on the premise of race is irrational. With that, the DA is simply saying we must all have amnesia and forget what the apartheid government did to South Africans. In the spirit of redressing, Bali, as a Black woman, should understand that the majority of South Africans and majority of young people in the Free State are not as privileged as she is to have a middle-class background, whereas if her parents cannot, if NSFAS cannot cater for her because she's too rich for NSFAS, then her parents were able to fend. Majority of Black South Africans don't have that privilege. So it's important for the Democratic Alliance to first understand that South Africans are predominantly Black. The majority of South Africans are Black. South Africans were oppressed, and they did not for many, many years have opportunities that white people had. So the system is still very much white. And that is why the ANC compels entities to have quotas that, okay, you are hiring. This percentage of the people you are hiring should be Black. This percentage of the people you are hiring should be female. This percentage should be should cater for the disability sector. So it's not about inequality with more inequality. We're still unequal, because when democracy was negotiated, unfortunately, the wealth part was not distributed to Black people. So the wealth remained with the white people. So the ANC is not wrong in saying Black people must receive preference. I'm not saying white people should not get employment, but the systems that are currently in place are fine as they are. And now we are unapologetic as the ANC Youth League on the quota systems and how we can't feel sorry now for white people and say this and this and that they are being discriminated. It's not discrimination. It's redressing the injustices that the white minority were privileged for such a long time in South Africa. So it's nothing personal. It's just stressing. And it's to cater for the majority of South Africans as well. Now,
please go ahead.
To go back to what was requested on when and how. It's a continuation. It's a continuation process. For example, there's an expanded public works program that focuses on cleaning and greening. Now, that program caters for the unskilled and the uneducated predominantly. We said as the ANC Youth League to the ANC-led government, we can't simply focus on cleaning and greening. We need to skill young people so that they can also compete in other aspects of the economy. For example, what was now recently introduced, and the closing date is the 12th of April this year, is also an EPWP program that focuses on artisan program. It was 60% of those applicants, and then 40% of those who are 35 and older. The other program seeks to skill. It's also an EPWP program, seeks to skill young people and people in general on your carpentry, your electricians, anything in relation to if we look at I'm just so angry, it's fine. If we look at also the presidential stimulus, it helped a lot, and it is yet to help because Gutwe, it's not going to be removed. 87,357 young people were able to get relief from that stimulus, and the requirements there was a minimum of grade 12. Now, if we also look at the EPWP, if we go back to that, the target for the previous 5 years was 260,000 young people from the Free State. And to date, the actual number realized in terms of absorbing into a work market young people, it's 282,907. So something has been done. And the ANC-led government in this aspect of EPWP has done beyond what it said it would do. And then it's not the only initiative by the ANC-led government to curb unemployment. We also have the SITAs that are doing various strides as well. We have Mercita, Bank SITA, Facet Services, simply fund qualifications and institutions of higher learning, be it colleges or universities, fund, and thereafter give internships, which also to a great extent do assist. And as the ANC Youth League, we have advocated, and we are happy to say that the ANC-led government has heard us as the necessary agitation to the mother body, that all vacant funded posts be advertised, such that in municipalities and provincial government everywhere, everything that is vacant and funded is being advertised as we speak, such that those young people who now no longer qualify for the SITAs can be absorbed in the job market and have more benefits in terms of medical and whatnot and whatnot. So the strides are being there. So we are focusing on the unskilled young people and the skilled young people, educated and uneducated. And there was a comment by Mbali that she didn't use those words exactly, but she says that all red tape must be removed in terms of informal trading. As the ANC Youth League was saying, the ANC-led government must introduce bylaws that will regulate trading in our townships, such that amakula that are undocumented and taking over these spaza shops can be removed and our people can trade, such that these salons that are managed by undocumented foreigners can be removed and our people, because if you look at the workforce, it's young Black people, but their bosses are these undocumented foreigners. And we're not being xenophobic. There's a foreigner who has the necessary documents and falls within the necessary bylaws. They can continue trading, but the reality is that majority of these people are not documented and they continue to exploit the economy of South Africa. So if we were to also zoom people in this province and subsequently the country.
Thank you very much, Sinaz. I think what I request of you is to perhaps turn your video off as we continue the discussion, because I think it takes a lot also from your audio. I did see Mbali rolling her eyes when you made a comment there. I think I will want to have you on it a bit later on, though. But there are some questions that we're getting from our viewers. One of them says this youth unemployment certificate that Mbali were talking about, that will rotationally give opportunities to people who have been unemployment for a period of 12 months. Where will those opportunities be coming from? Why do you have to wait for somebody to be hungry for 12 months in order for you to give them a job, for example? That's what they're saying. And there is another one which says, Osinazo, you are talking about 5 years, which you've created in excess of 200,000 EPWP opportunities. Do you know what has happened to those people that, you know, gained access to those EPW opportunities beyond that 5 years? Are they somewhere in a better place now, or are they back to unemployment? I think maybe let me not ask too many questions. Let me give you like an opportunity to each answer those questions before we go to other questions. Mbali?
Thanks, Tamsanga. In reference to the first question, I believe it was with regard to the Youth Unemployment Opportunity Certificate. The question was, where will these jobs come from? One thing about the DA that we constantly emphasize is the public-private partnership. In that it, there is the job of the government is not to hand out jobs per se. The job of the government, again, is to create a conducive environment so that we attract businesses, right? And so I want to emphasize the fact that as the government, we will partner with the private sector to ensure that jobs are sort of, I guess, streamlined for people to line up for. And I think it's always important to emphasize that that you can partner up with civil societies, different civil societies. I want to make reference to my own hometown, where you have different business sectors, your premiers, you have your interior shops and whatnot, where these businesses are actually starting up internships. And while starting up these internships, the government, we collaborate to say, listen, how many internships can you give out from your business? How many can be streamlined for young people to get the opportunity to be employed? And so I think that is something I really needed to emphasize on, is that the most important role, our core role, is to just create an attractive environment, make sure that the road infrastructure is well kept so that businesses are invited into towns and businesses can, you know, sort of migrate and or get into towns and create jobs through their service offers. And so ours is more so collaboration. And that's what we're trying to emphasize. I don't know if there was a question I've missed, Tamsanga. I think you've asked a second question, but no, you said we will refer to it later.
No, it's fine. We'll talk about that one later because I think it talks about issues of immigration and so on, but we'll talk about that a bit later. The second question was for Osinazo on the 200,000 job opportunities created through EPWP. What has happened to to those people? Like what? I think it tries to say, what are the exit, opportunities that, you know, as they exit the EPWP process, where therefore do they go to? Sinazo?
Thank you, Tami. As I said, that we tasked the government and they have delivered on that to actually do more in terms of EPWP, because we realized that we employ people and then there's no exit. But with the new EPWP artisan program, you are now skilled. The government skills you and then offers you, places you, in fact, places you and you get a job. And there's also an initiative by the MEC of Roads, of a township revitalization project and road maintenance. So those young people who are being skilled are also being redirected to their various communities. You see these connecting towns, and have you noticed how potholes have become the order of the day? So there's currently a program by the MEC of Rhodes to and that program is led by young people in terms of employment. So we then gave an instruction to the MEC that young people must be employed in these roads, the same way we gave an instruction to the government to create quotas that are inclusive of Black people. And then also to add, there was something Bali said about primary education. So I'll take advantage because I'm on the platform already. So as the ANC...
Maybe before you go there, because we're going to go back to education. I just want, I also have to deal with some questions from our viewers. There's a question from Mutlale Pule, who has a question from Bali specifically. It says, what type of jobs are being created in the Western Cape and is getting these jobs based on merit? And when we say merit, what exactly do we mean? Thank you. That is a question from Mutlale Pule, who's on who's online, I think on Twitter. The kind of jobs being created in the Western Cape. And when we say people are being employed on merit, what exactly do you mean by merit? That's a question from Mutlale Pule from Bali.
Right. What I mean by merit is that let me use the municipality as an example. I think that's the best option. When you do not hire people who have the qualifications to do the jobs that they need to do in terms of service delivery, you get a situation where municipalities start collapsing. For instance, our biggest hiccup, I'm a councillor in Mokaka, and our biggest hiccup is that there is financial mismanagement, right? Or rather, let me put it this way, finances are not being used adequately. And we had a council resolution, I think a week ago, where an acting CFO was appointed to take over for a certain period. And we as the DA did not trust the acting CFO's capability based off on past experiences. This alluded to the fact that he was not making payments to Eskom. He was not complying with legislation when it comes to appointment of certain positions within the municipality. And so what I mean is that merit is that, do you have the capability? Do you have the capacity to do the job? That's merit. Hiring people that do not know how to job, we find ourselves in a situation where services are not being provided for because the person simply can't do the job. If you hire someone to fix your streetlights, but that person has no qualification, has no clue how to fix the streetlights, do you actually think we will have functional streetlights is the question. And the answer to that is absolutely a big no. And so that's what I wanted to press on, is that when I speak on merit, I speak on qualifications. I speak on when I mean qualifications, I don't mean a degree or a PhD or a bachelor's degree. No, what I mean is that do you have the necessary skills to do the job? That's merit. Do you have whatever job you're applying for, do you have the skills? Thanks.
Also, somebody, I think this is for both of you. So we'll start with Sinazo. Somebody who says, is there going to be an establishment of the metropolis? And I would think that would mean Mangaung, because that is the only metro we have in the Free State. Because they are this person says, because we are sitting with qualifications at home. So would there be an establishment of the metropolis department which would absorb people in terms of employment? Sinazo, if you guys are to continue with power in the Free State, would you encourage the Mangaung municipality to establish a metropolis department?
Thank you, Tamsanga. It is necessary for a metro municipality to have a metropolis department. Part of the reason is that it's bigger than the other municipalities, and therefore would need more workforce in as far as police work is concerned. And there's already an establishment in terms of a conversation around that, not merely a conversation, but there's already discussions of budget allocations to such that should be implemented. I don't want to commit to say in the next year or so, but it's already in the pipeline in Doye Metropolis in Mangao, and to a certain degree, fleet has already been secured even. So it's just a matter of when is it launched, but it's an initiative that's being discussed and it's in its finalization stages.
And I suppose, Mbali, you would say that even if that it may be the case, you would have insistence on merit, employ people in that department on merit, because that can be a dangerous thing to employ people who are not merited to be in those positions, because that is a that is a department that has a lot of influence in society.
Yes, Abdi Tamsanga. I think it's very important to mention that mentioning the basis that people should be employed on the premise of merit is not to sound malicious or to be offensive, not at all. Because in the same breath, we also speak about how do we get people to have merits? How do we get people to be qualified? How do we get people to be skilled? You know, through skills development programs, through skills enhancement programs, we ensure that people are equipped for the job. But that's what I really wanted to emphasize on. And I think there's a negative connotation attached to me saying that the DA advocates for employing individuals on the premise of merit. And there's no negative connotation attached to that. If you have the skills to do the job, it's very simple, you get the job. But if you do not have the skills to do the job, then we are actually setting you up for failure. Do you understand? And so I think it's very important that we do not set up anyone for failure, that we equip them and skill them to be in positions or occupy positions where they can now sort of implement their skills. Wabona Abdi Tamsanga. That's what I'm trying to emphasize on.
That was a question from our viewers. Thank you very much for the viewers who are viewing online and participating through submitting their questions. I think we have time for more. If you've got any more questions to submit to our panelists, please do so. I want to go back to Sinazo, who was talking about who wanted to add on education, because I think this links up quite nicely, jobs and education. Sinazo, before I interrupted you, you wanted to, to add on this based on what you were thinking at the time, based on education. Sinazo, you may go ahead.
Thank you, Titi. That is correct. Bali made a point that they would want to zoom in on grade 4 literacy, but primary education as a whole needs attention. And not just, yes, the Free State Province has been doing remarkably well in as far as grade 12s are concerned. And I think this is a conversation that we've had previously. There are strides to even now give the necessary attention to grade 7. So a learner exiting primary school should have necessary capabilities for high school, such that you don't find unnecessary dropping out because the child feels that they can't work according to that standard. And in addition to that, in strengthening the artificial intelligence of the Free State Province and reduce or ultimately remove this thing of sourcing out artificial intelligence from other provinces, and in attempts to delve more into the fourth industrial revolution and shape and develop the 4IR trajectory. So in the Free State, 21 schools with 3,490 grade 8s have been introduced to coding and robotics. So there's that initiative as well. And in grade 9, we have... There's someone in the background speaking. Am I audible?
You are. Sorry. Snazo, quiet, please.
All right. And also in grade nine, in 19 schools, we've targeted 2,693 grade nines, also in on a coding and robotics initiative, so that to strengthen this 4IR in our province and ultimately be digital, fully digital, without outsourcing these services from other provinces. And in as much as far as being skilled is concerned, I feel like by virtue of being Black, there's already a question in the DA's mind that, is this person skilled? Like, Tonyama, there's a question, are you skilled? But when you're white, there's no such question. So I believe that no one will apply for a job that they don't qualify for, and no one in their right mind would accept someone for a job that they don't qualify for. So the DA must not say skill. There's skills program. Young people go through these things. Young people go through internships. They are educated. Those who are not educated, they go to these skills program and they apply for jobs. So they should not be now discriminated by virtue of race. The same treatment should be given to Blacks and whites. And when they relate to the Western Cape, they just focus on Cape Town. If you look at the townships of the Western Cape and you look at where the majority is residing, it's still underdeveloped under the DA-led leadership of the Western Cape. So they're just taking the cherry, which is Cape Town, and saying this and this and this is being done. But if we're honest and we truly look at it, go to Khayelitsha, go to these townships, that a lot of things have been happening, but the DA is nowhere to be found in our townships.
Yeah, thank you. And I think you may be very generous when you say that nobody will apply for a job that they don't qualify for, or nobody would offer somebody a job that they don't qualify for. We have had many instances of it. For example, there in the Tshwane municipality, there was a chief of staff who was hired in the office of the executive mayor there, led by the DA, who had no qualifications for the positions that they were hired in, ultimately removed once they were exposed by the opposition parties in that council. So Sinazo, people have applied for jobs that they don't qualify for, and that they definitely are not suited for. But I see Umbali having a lot of of like wow moments as you are speaking there. I'm sure that she wants to put in some responses. Go ahead, Umbali.
Thanks, Tamsanga. I think it's very important to note, and I'm going to echo this throughout this entire panel discussion, that ours is just one. We are heavy on the sentiment of catering for all. We've been very clear on that. We've been unapologetic on that. And when my counterpart, my colleague, keeps making reference speaking on also the putting words into my mouth, it's very disheartening. I think she really alluded to the fact that we as the DA, we premise our merit on anything outside of qualifications or anything outside of skills. I have never said that. I said the DA is very adamant about employing people on the premise of their merit. And employing people on the merits of merit means that you disregard anything else except their ability to do the job, the capabilities that they have to do the job. And I think it is very important to echo that one of our biggest principles is non-rationalism at all spheres of government, in all aspects of government. And we always emphasize that if the person has the skills to follow through with the job, then the person should be hired. Not once have I mentioned that the DA looks down on a certain particular race? Not once did I mention that the DA does not include anyone else. I reiterated countless times throughout the panel discussion that the DA is a non-rationalist party, and that our mandate, or sort of our overarching theme, is that opportunities should be provided to everyone. Opportunities should be created to everyone. So if there's a skills enhancement program, it should be offered to everyone, not a specific demographic, not a specific gender. It should be given to everyone. And so that we can capacitate people to be skills to compete in the labor market. And that's what, that was the premise of my argument, is that we are looking for people who are qualified to do the job. Again, I'm going to use the example of the streetlight. If I have a broken streetlight in my area, in my road, or across my house, I do not care if the person is a woman who's going to fix my streetlight. I do not care if the person who's going to fix my streetlight is Black. I do not care if the person is that fixing my streetlight is 25 or 87. If that person is an electrician, a qualified electrician, has the skills to fix my streetlight, that's all that matters. Because at the end of the day, I just want that service. I want the service that comes from this person who's qualified to do it. Regardless of any of your, regardless of your ethnicity or anything else, and it applies to anything. Whoever fixes my road, if you have the qualifications to fix my road, it doesn't matter who you're affiliated with, if you have the ability, fix the road. And so again, I think it's very important when I say opportunity for all, and when I say that it is important to focus on merit as opposed to anything else, this is exactly what I mean. I see Tom Sangla, you want to cut me off. But again, this is why many of our municipalities within our province are suffering, is because we do not hire on the premise of merit at all. We hire on the premise of affiliation. We hire on the premise of anything outside of your qualifications. And if we hired qualified people in financial departments, in the technical service department, if we hired people to run policies who understand how to implement policies in municipalities across the province, then we would not be having countless of municipalities collapsing as we speak.
Tebza, do you want to come in there?
Can I come in instead?
Oh, before you come in, Tebza.
Let me give you a platform.
For the rebuttal, let's give Sinazwe an opportunity.
Thank you, Titi. I want to say Mbali and the DA must not throw stones whereas they live in a glass house. Because look now, they're speaking about these skills and things. And you also invoked something that I had forgotten. They in all these snaplets of municipalities they are in charge of, there's always a scandal of unqualified white people being absorbed. Look at Umgeni municipality. Look at Tshwane municipality. Look at Ekurhuleni municipality. Look at the Western Cape itself. So the issue of qualification seems to be put aside if a person is white. And the DA seems to be fronting with Black people. It's not really for every, it's not a party for everyone. It's just fronting with Black people because they speak about a cater deployment policy, a policy that they themselves practice, but the difference is that their policy favors white people and it's done under the carpet. But the Black people who have left the DA have exposed, and the Black people who are still within the DA have exposed such tendencies. So the DA is even when Bali is speaking, it's very anti-Black. It's only for, even if you look at the food, speak on simple terms about the DA. The people Ababeka, the vote DA and whatnot on the street polls. Have you ever seen a white person do that? Volunteering their time. The hard labor is done by the Black people. The fruits are reaped by the white people. which is what I seek to condemn here. Thank you, Tami.
Thank you, Sinazo. I think the later stage will, I think towards the closing remarks, you know, we'll give everybody an opportunity to say something. But Tebza, you wanted to chip in.
Sure. No. I've been listening to both parties speak, ne? And I'm going to say from an independent point of view, I'm a bit disappointed in both parties due to the fact that, hore, one, you look at the issue of, let's talk about the ruling party. Programs like your EPW that caters for the unskilled, we shouldn't be actually be talking about programs like that. We need to be actually talking about more programs that actually boosts young people. I'm going to give you a simple scenario. Right now, there is sharp, the unemployment rate is quite high for young people. So they saw an opportunity to say, how do we create work for ourselves? So they're utilizing social media platforms to generate that particular work in a sense of content creators and influencers. And I'm going to give you a simple example, the likes of Bo Meji. They started a podcast, what started off as two guys sitting on a mic and talking. Today, it's generating them good income. It has created even more than 23 jobs for other young people. So what we should be talking about, especially now in the 30 years of democracy, is how do we improve opportunities for youngsters to actually benefit from what is currently there? Unlike us saying, we still got unskilled young people that are not educated. When the ANC took over, it said we prioritize education for young people. And unfortunately, Jorge, in 2024, we're still highlighting that situation. It's quite sad. And I was actually hoping that we would actually be talking about other things. Also, for the DA, honestly, on a serious note, it doesn't cater for young people. Yes, we know, Jorge, in the Western Cape, there's opportunities for young, white, privileged people that are getting that. And even if you go to varsities today, you only see black people dominating varsities. And they're spending so many years for varsity, by the graduation, the next thing you don't get, they don't get jobs, which is the saddest thing. But you, when you look into the white race, immediately after high school, automatically sits again into the system and is already working into the system. And by the time when you graduate as a young black person at tertiary level, that person who was working is already at the managerial point. I mean, like, even if you Google top CEOs in South Africa, they don't have master's degree. So now, on a serious note, this thing of the DA saying we need experience, we need qualification, for us black people, it doesn't cater for us. It shuts us out, because majority of us now, you have to depend on this piece of paper that you have to spend 3-5 years at a tertiary institution studying for you to get an opportunity. I mean, like, that is totally, totally ridiculous. Why can't we come up with a system that caters for everyone that speaks? I mean, like, we shouldn't be debating about races, about racial issues right now, 30 years down the drain. But the saddest reality is that it's still there. And up until us as African people and white people sit down and have that uncomfortable conversation about the racial division in this country, we will never, ever, ever solve the situation, irrespective of what we can do. I mean, like, we can sit and say, yes, black people are in power with the ANC and all that, and the white people want to come back with the DA. But at the end of the day, if we can't sit down and have that uncomfortable conversation about what happened in the past and what's currently happening, because irrespective of what, racial division, you always find it amongst both races in workplaces, in schools, in everywhere you go. So unfortunately, if we don't deal with those situations, and it's the same as, I can say the same thing for the ANC, to say, let's have a conversation about how you also oppressing young people. You oppressing your own people, because it's all about situations. I'm going to go back and make an example. If you look at the parliament, It's an old age, but we keep on referring to Bosnazo to saying young people are in power. You guys are not in power. You're not in key positions that take decisions for young people to change their lives. So we cannot say that we're going to create opportunities if young people cannot even voice out their opinion. I mean, like, imagine if you had, look at the Minister of Youth. I mean, like, simple, blatant example. You're sitting with a lady who's close to a 70 years old, but she's the Minister of Young People. How is she going to cater for those? How is she going to understand a young 19-year-old coming to her and saying, I'm a content creator and this is what I do? She won't even understand anything. She's not even on Facebook. So how are we going to create those kind of jobs? At least now what I can say to both parties, especially when you want to curb the unemployment rate, is that let's sit down and have that uncomfortable discussion about this racial division. And you must remember that division comes from where? The older generation. The younger generation is prepared to talk. So what's stopping Nazo and Mbali to sit down and say, look, we're uncomfortable with this situation, but let's work for our young people.
I think we're going to be running out of time, but I think let's move like to the understandably the point about employment and unemployment is quite a key issue in our country, and that's why we've delved so much into it. But I think let's move just to one important thing also that is very important in our country, the health sector. The DA says that they will rescue South Africans from a failing public health system. I think the ANC also agrees that we need to do better for our health system. For example, there's been a piloting in some parts of our country of the national health insurance, and somehow this is viewed as a solution by the ANC towards our public health system. Maybe let's give the DA an opportunity just to reflect and delve deeper into what do they mean and how will they actually rescue the public health system before we give to Sinazo to give her view on the NHI or any other method that they think they may improve the public health system. Mbali, please go ahead.
Thank you so much, Tamsanqa. And I think the direction that you've taken is so progressive, because at the end of the day, we are in an economic abyss where our economy is currently very stagnant. And it's because of challenges outside of the main issue is poor political leadership. And that's why we find ourselves in a situation where our healthcare system is actually also not of a high quality standard. And actually, just to mention, our provincial leader, Dr. Roy Jankelson, and a few of members of parliament will be doing an oversight visit today at Bulanomi Hospital, just to assess the situation there. And I think one thing I just want to highlight before delving deeply into the healthcare discussion is that one thing about us, we do continuous monitoring and oversight as an opposition party should, to assess the situation, to ensure what solutions can be implemented to remedy whatever challenges we're currently faced with. So in terms of the healthcare system, I think we can all agree that there is first and foremost a shortage of staff when it comes to capacity within the different hospitals and whatnot. And that has been mentioned time and time again, that we do not have enough medical care staff to cater for, especially particularly, let me actually make it in particular reference to the public healthcare system, where we do not have enough medical staff to capacitated to actually help out within the particular sector. And so I just actually want to read out from our manifesto what we plan to do. First and foremost, that's the first thing. And the second thing is that we have an issue with infrastructure as well within our healthcare system in terms of maintenance and upgrading. A huge part of a problem with the healthcare system is that infrastructure that is within the hospital to help with healthcare services is not some sections are not functional. We once went, we did an oversight at Boitumelo a year or two ago, I don't remember. And one of the sections of the hospitals was not completely functional because the hospital was not complete in terms of renovations and whatnot. And it had been halted for a very long time. So I think one of the most important thing is infrastructure and a shortage of staff. When it comes to infrastructure, so what the DA is saying is that we are ensuring that all capital expenditure is directly financed and controlled by a healthcare facility administrator and not a public works department as it's currently happening, whether national or provincial. For all hospitals or revenues raised outside of the budgeted allocations will be retained and managed by the relevant hospitals and deployed in accordance with their needs. When it comes to the shortage of healthcare workers, we will be developing a national healthcare workers plan to identify skills shortages and to ensure that we have sufficient doctors, nurses, and administrators within the system, because obviously that has been a big issue. And this plan will rely on academic institutions, health departments, and training facilities working together to prevent mismatches in terms of skills and supply that could lead to unemployed graduates. And so that is something that we touched on quite briefly in terms of the shortage of staff. But we also, again, highlighted the importance of maintaining and upgrading the current infrastructure that is in place and perhaps capacitating it a bit more. Another element that I'd like to actually touch on is that we need to separate politicians from administrators. So moving away from political interference within the healthcare system. So by separating politicians from administrators, regulators, and all public entities responsible for the delivery of healthcare services, this measure will prevent harmful conflicts of interest in the appointment of personnel and procurement processes from getting in the way of good governance and service delivery. I think what this speaks to is that what I've realized in government, particularly in provincial government or local government, is that there is no distinction between the political role and the administration role, right? There's no separation between the two. Somehow they are intertwined, and that's not supposed to be the case. There should be absolutely no political interference when it comes to the management of healthcare services, the appointment of healthcare service staff. There should be no
I don't know. It seems we've got a connection issue with Bali, but I think we must. Hello, Bali. Bali can come through also. I think we'll give the opportunity to Sinazo to give their perspective on the health issues.
I will ask heavily it could be.
Hello, Bali. Hello? I think we missed you. I think for like a good 30 seconds. So a lot of what you said in that 30 seconds, you know, we missed it. But please give your concluding remarks on this particular aspect of the health issue before we give to Sinas.
Yes, and so that I was really just emphasizing. Yes, just the last 30 seconds, Tamsang, I was emphasizing on the importance to separate political and administration parts when it comes to government, or elements when it comes to government. And I realized that there is no separation between the two. I think it is important that we note that no politician has authority to make appointments or have interference in appointments when it comes to the healthcare system. That is solely devoted or given to the administrators of the healthcare system or the healthcare departments. And that is very important. I mean, we advocate heavily on separating the two elements, separating politics from administration when it comes to the functioning and the operation of healthcare facilities or hospitals and clinics and so forth.
Thank you very much. That is the DA perspective on how to fix the health sector in the Free State and in the country. Now let's give it to Sinazo. Same question for you.
Thank you, Tammy. Now, before I continue, I just wanted to make an emphasis.
Go ahead, make the emphasis.
To everyone who's listening at home, that the HR, can you hear me?
We're struggling a bit, but try again.
Okay. I wanted to say that the NHI is a very important system because it's a financial system that pools funds to provide access to quality, affordable healthcare for all South Africans based on each and everyone's needs. So it's not like medical aid that is reserved for a selected few. This one is for all South Africans. And it was approved last year by the National Assembly. And the DA was against this policy. The DA, it must be noticed that it was against South Africans receiving equal quality healthcare in South Africa. So the DA cannot come now and say they care about everyone's health, whereas there was a bill that was passed in the National Assembly just in 2023, and they rejected it publicly without a fear or favor. So in moving from that, in the spirit of filling public service vacancies in the healthcare sector, just last year, between April and December, having noted the lack in staff of public hospitals, 245 doctors were appointed, 218 nurses, and also assisting staff. The doctors who also finished their community services were inculcated this year. 217 medical professionals in January this year started duty, being dietitians, radiographers, physiotherapists, and all these positions linked within the healthcare system. So the MEC of Health in the Free State is doing a remarkable job as well in terms of absorbing medical professionals to ensure smooth running of hospitals. And I want to emphasize the importance of this NHI bill. It means now that all South Africans, in fact, will have access to all. It won't just be that budget that was allocated to health, but there'll be more funds allocated to the health system of the country, and subsequently, the life expectancy and everything else will be better. And you will not find a person, because everyone, if Ebenako would want to go to your medic clinic and whatnot to give birth, but now the majority is subjected to public hospitals. And now the NHI seeks to improve public health care in South Africa. So that was a very, very good stride by the ANC and other political parties who fought and won against the DA, which said, no, that bill should not be passed.
I think let's continue, ladies. I think, you know, there is a lot to talk about that we have not touched on, but we should have another opportunity, you know, to continue this discussion, maybe on another day. The two of you again, you know, I think we need to take it there. But let me give you both an opportunity to close this session by giving our viewers and your potential voters an opportunity to hear, like just in closing 2 minutes, like in 2 minutes, each of you, give us a summary of what you think is important that your voters should capture before they cast their vote on the 29th of September, of May. Let's start with you, Mbali.
Thank you so much, Tamsanga. The DA is very supportive of access to healthcare for everyone. universal healthcare and coverage, but the NHI is not the way to do it. And we have expressed that countless times. And much of that is because it does not have a feasible funding model. There is instances of maladministration that could happen. We do not have the capacity to actually accommodate the NHI. So that's why I think it's very important that we are still adamant about giving access to healthcare for all people. But moving away from that, I think what is important is that when you're voting for a political party, vote for a political party, number one, that is able to assess problems adequately, broadly, to research the problems that we're having so that they can find sustainable, realistic, progressive solutions to those problems. But most importantly, vote for a political party that can implement those solutions for in the best interests of citizens so that we have a quality life. There's no use, you know, every year in and year out, every 5 years, we get a manifesto, but there is no implementation. One thing about the DA that you cannot take away from it is that we are implementers. We find solutions, we identify problems, we find solutions to those problems, and we implement those solutions through our different policies, which are very progressive, very universal, and of course, cater for all individuals regardless. And so I think it's very important that when you really think about voting on the 29th of May, take that into consideration. Will I be considered regardless of how I show up? Will I be considered as a citizen? Will my services be catered for in all aspects? Is this political party able to end load shedding? Is this political party able to end water shedding? Is this political party able to create jobs and offer quality education? The Democratic Alliance has not been given an opportunity to govern at a national level. And I'm saying to the, I'm imploring citizens to actually just, what would happen if you would actually give the DA an opportunity and see what happens in the next 30 years, perhaps, because we've seen that in the past 30 years under the current leadership, under the current ruling party, not much has been done. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Mbali. Now, Sinazo.
Thank you, Tammy. Why young people should vote ANC on the 29th of March, 2024? Firstly, touching on May. Touching on what Tebogo just said, that young people are not in decision-making platforms, being the National Assembly, Parliament, and all of that. Now, if you were looking at the news recently, you would realize that the ANC in the year 2024 has done the undone of removing the old hags from Parliament. If you look at our list, it's predominantly young, predominantly female. So it's very youthful. We've tossed young people to go and represent us in Parliament. So the
representation, give me an example of an old hag that you removed from Parliament, Sinazo.
I'll forward you the list and you will see we've removed quite a number of them. Some 80, we've got like removed more than 80 people on the list and added fresh blood. So he's right to say that it's difficult for young people. If we don't have young ministers, if we don't have young MECs, how will those old MECs relate to the problems faced by the majority of our country, which is youth? So we took that into consideration as the ANC, and after the 29th of May, we will see a different South Africa altogether, a youth-inclusive South Africa. Now, young people must just make the right decision on the 29th of May. I will not be long because we've already exhausted the time that was given. We believe that unemployment is a scourge. Yes, there are strides to curb this unemployment. And we will not, as the youth of today, be prisoners that have never set foot at work. So it's important to really focus in priority number one of the ANC manifesto, which is to put South Africa at work. And the Premier of the Free State, also the ANC provincial chairperson, is hands-on in as much as put South Africa to work is concerned. And the ANC Youth League has been the necessary agitation. And if you look at our pages, you will see feedback after feedback with regards to youth unemployment. Because at the end of the day, we are the ruling party. There's nothing wrong with young people holding us accountable to our word. We said we would create jobs and we will create jobs. And I would like to use this platform also to advocate for a young MEC from the ANC-led government after the 29th of May, because I believe with everything that we have been doing currently, we will still be in power after the 29th of May. But now we need young MECs, even in the Free State. I'm confident that nationally we'll get youthful ministers and deputy ministers, but we need to make it an emphasis here at home as well, that we need an MEC that we can relate to as young people to push the youth agenda and to ensure that all young people are catered for in all sectors of the economy, be it business, be it vote ANC on the 29th of May.
Thank you very much, Sinazo. But that call, you must make it to the ANC where you belong, because we're not going to help you, unfortunately.
They're listening.
That is up to you. And I wonder if you'll ever be successful there, because looking at your list, your province to province list, I don't see a single young person in the top 10 in that list that you guys have. So good luck with that. But in conclusion, I want to thank both of you, Mbali, Nosinazo. You guys have done so well, given that we did not give you any preparatory notes for this discussion, but you handled it like professionals that you definitely are. We thank you, and that's why I would want to have a follow-up discussion with both of you, because there is so much that because I think if you look at it, we only touched on three topics, broadly in this discussion. So there is a lot more which is left out, which we will have an opportunity to talk to maybe in the next 2 weeks, or as soon as our producer contacts you. But do give us your time again. We appreciate it. And yeah, I think our young people have also enjoyed, listening to both of you. And let's make ourselves more available to our public. Thank you very much.
Thank you so much, Kimson.
Well, I think I speak for Debza too. So for now, he is. Debza?
My last conclusions.
Yes.
I know, now you know I can preach, but the lady spoke very well. And all I can say, there's so much work that needs to be done. And yeah, so like I say, we need to have those uncomfortable conversations, and this is the time. So I don't have much to say besides, let's have those uncomfortable conversations that we can take forward. And yeah, maybe we can have coffee in future and see. Kapayampa.
I would be happy to have coffee with the ladies, of course.
With the ladies. Let's have coffee with the ladies. Now those in bloom.
Definitely.
Like have a live discussion in studio in a town hall setup.
Over a cup of coffee.
Yeah, let's make it happen.
But it was a great debate, Jim. The ladies, they really pulled through. And what I can actually say going forward, I mean, when we have a second leg of this, allow me to free flow. There's a couple of points that I got that I would love to free flow with both of them.
Thank you very much, guys. We have had an exciting time. We will be back again with the next episode next week, but certainly we're very happy with this one. So thank you.